From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to be back. I heard I was mentioned last week.
Yes, we'll get to that in a second. Later in the broadcast, Ed Gillespie is the Republican candidate for governor of Virginia. He will be joining us. Joining us now in studio is Ike Leggett, Montgomery County Executive. He's a Democrat. Ike Leggett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me back, Kojo.
Tom Sherwood, before we talk about last week, let's talk about last night.
Yeah.
Well, not that part of it. The part of it that you obviously won't want to talk about is the result. The part I'd like to talk about is the fact that Exelon decided to pay to help keep Metro open so that all of the attendants at the game would be able to get home on Metro. It apparently raises some ethical questions for some because Exelon, which, of course, is in the position of going before the D.C. Public Service Commission, the utilities regulator, which can either approve or deny rate increase requests from utilities. And Mayor Bowser was standing with the Exelon executives when they made this very generous offer. Do you think it compromises the city?
Well, you know,
not what you
I
think
the short answer is no.
Okay.
Does it raise some questions? Yes, but so does campaign contributions. So do inaugural contributions. What's embarrassing is that the District of Columbia has a competitive baseball team at a very popular ballpark where 60% of the people come from Virginia, and it can't figure out with Metro how to keep Metro open for the games when they play at night, and you have to go around with a hat in hand begging for people. Exelon, which, of course, is the new owner of Pepco Power Company, is subject to utilities. But, you know, they are involved in any number of things. And so I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is, why are we such a Bush League city or region that Metro can't figure out how to serve the people when it has big events? We'll have the same issue come up next summer, next June for the All-Star.
There's another question. Why can't the Nationals pay for it?
Well, that's another. Well, the Nationals could, but and again, we should point out this is putting up money to cover any potential cost to Metro. You put up $100,000, and if Metro's ridership doesn't cover the cost of the $100,000, you pay for it. But you're not paying the $100,000 out of pocket. I'm not sure why the mayor and the council can't say to the Nats, well, you know, you have to put it up because it's your business. And if you don't put it up, then we won't put police over there. We won't do anything. But this is a very good moneymaker for the region, for the city, and something ought to be done. That's just part of the Metro mess that we're in.
Speaking of the Metro mess that we are in, there's increasing pressure for Metro Board Chair Jack Evans to resign, and that brings us to last week when you were not here, and we had guest analyst Mark Plotkin, and Jack Evans called in on the show.
I heard.
And asked the candidate for the Democratic candidate for Governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, whether or not he would be supportive of a region-wide 1% sales tax in order to provide Metro with a dedicated funding stream. In response to that, Governor Hogan of Maryland said that Jack Evans was making a juvenile outburst, one of many that caused him to call on Jack Evans to resign as Metro Board Chair, and he was joined yesterday by Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly in the request for Jack Evans to resign.
What's and saying? Also, in other news, the sun came up in the east. Jack Evans has been a principal critic of the suburbs for as long as I've been covering politics, and he's been involved since 1990. He's also chairman of the Metro Board, where he says the city will do a 1% sales tax. Dedicate funding for Metro. Maryland and Virginia have flapped, he says, their jaws, clapped their hands, and frowned and danced all around. But bottom line, they're not paying for the Metro system that serves their jurisdictions. So he says he's going to keep pushing for this. Jerry Connolly doesn't like Jack Evans' position. Governor Hogan doesn't. But what are they actually doing besides complaining? That's what I need to know. They keep saying, well, we got to fix Metro, and then we'll worry about funding. Well, that's kind of backwards.
Well, Jack Evans also linked a vote on giving Maryland money for the Purple Line to a procedure of the Metro Board that he wanted to see passed and which apparently Maryland had threatened to veto. And he said, well, let's do an exchange here. And apparently because there was no real relationship between the organization of the Metro Board and the funding for the Purple Line, Governor Hogan said, there you go again.
Well, that's what Jack Evans has told Martin DeCaro in his report for WAMU yesterday. I mean, this is public horse trading that normally goes on behind closed doors. And Jack has made several threats against the suburbs and their failure to fund Metro, including, remember, he said, I think on this program, that, well, yeah, you can build that silver line out to Dulles, but we're not going to put cars on the line. So I think, the issue is there's all this flapping around in panic, because they know something has to be done. Everyone, Virginia's holding out hope that Ray LaHood's proposal, when it comes out, I think in the next couple of weeks, will give them some political cover to say, yes, let's change the structure. The city's already willing to change the structure. We'll have to see what Governor Hogan does. But the structure has to change. Jack Evans is not going to stop his condemnation of suburban political and state and Virginia politics.
We have a suburban political leader in the room with us who also happens
Evans
to be,
actually likes him, though.
Who actually happens to be a strong supporter of the Purple Line, and here comes Jack Evans with a deal that could. What do you think about all of this?
Well, let me go back to say that I've admired and liked Jack for a number of years. However, I think that he's wrong on this particular issue, and I think that we need to look at a new regoverned structure. And I think what you've seen over the last couple of days is probably why, because it has become somewhat much more political. If you get people who are outside of the political realm, at least to some degree, I think we can avoid some of these political disputes and get people who are more dedicated, professional, toward trying to solve the system. And I'm not sure that we're going to get there unless we have a very substantive change in the structure itself. And that may mean that some of the politicians and other people who traditionally have been on the board are no longer on the board. I think Jack has done a great job for the city. He continues to fight for the city. But this is a regional transit system that needs a regional approach and with people who are dedicated to that purpose.
Mr. Leggett, do you think Mr. Evans would, in fact, stop the Purple Line? I don't get the sense that he would. Governor Hogan has hurt the Purple Line more than anybody. He cut the state funding by $400 million. And yes, he's going along with it now, but your county, Prince George's, had to spend the money. I don't see Jack Evans actually stopping the Purple Line, but I think what he's trying to say is we need a governing structure and we need a dedicated source of revenue. They go hand in hand, not one necessarily before the other.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think that in order to get the confidence that you need, to get the support that you need at all levels of state and local governance, you're going to need both. And I think that having a governance structure would probably lend itself much more to getting the kind of financial support you want.
In fact,
But that is being resisted to some degree by Jack and others.
Well, Jack says he wants to change the structure too, but in a different way. But if Mr. LaHood can give you a path to changing the structure, then that's going to put tremendous pressure on the state of Maryland and the state of Virginia to stop complaining about Metro and then do something about the funding.
Well, I'm clearly one who's very much in support of additional funding for Metro, but I think that in order for us to get to where we need to go, they need to address the structure challenges as well.
Right.
Purple Line construction is moving forward. You're a big supporter. It's moving forward despite an ongoing lawsuit, but those living along the route and those who enjoy the recreation trail say they're not being notified about construction plans. They say they were given less than a week's notice that the trail would close and clearing and tree cutting would be underway. Can this project move forward in a way that better addresses the concerns of residents?
I think the concerns of the residents are valid. I think that there was a drop in the notification from the state and from the private contractors to provide the information that was needed. We needed more notice, and I think that we've now corrected those things, and the Secretary of Transportation and the vendor have indicated very clearly that there are mistakes made, and those mistakes will not be made going forward. So I anticipate that there may be some bumps up and down, because when you're dealing with a project of this size and magnitude in the construction in a rather congested area, there will be some concerns, but not the concerns about notification and transparency.
The good thing is it's going forward.
Yes, it is.
You vetoed the $15 minimum wage bill passed earlier this year by the county council, but it's up for debate again. Earlier this week, a key committee extending the timeline for businesses to adopt that rate. Does giving businesses more time allay your concerns? And obviously,
well, what they've essentially done, at least at the committee level, is adopt the proposal that I submitted to them earlier. I suggested that in order to get my vote, signature on the matter, we needed to move the dates back somewhat. We needed to provide some relief for some of the small businesses, redefine small businesses, provide some opportunities for young people who are going into the workforce, and to address some of the other concerns as it relates to compression and what have you. I submitted that to the county councils about a month or so ago, and what essentially happened was that they adopted the proposal that I submitted. So if they vote along those lines, essentially what I've submitted, then I'm obliged to sign what I've asked them to vote for.
And just for people who may not be up to speed, how quickly would the county get to $15 an hour?
Well, the original proposal suggested by 2020. What I suggested, 2022 for the small business, 2024 for large business, 2024 for small businesses. When you think about it, this is one of the few, if not the only, in the entire country, standalone suburban jurisdictions that's doing this. You also could consider the other factors involved here. In terms of progressive legislation, the fact that employees, labor forces, and so forth, Montgomery County, on virtually every issue that you can describe, has been out front on that. And so when you look at this, it is appropriate to say you have to look at all of these things in totality. And as a result of that, it could adversely affect some of our business, especially small business. So it's not
maybe
a question at this point whether or not we
study.
Get there. Yeah, well, that study came
up. Another question came up. Can the county get its money back for that flawed study that Tom is referring to?
We have not paid it. We have not paid it, and we do not intend to pay it.
Oh, so you don't have to get any money back if you haven't put any money out.
Is there any indication?
Which raises another question. How long does Montgomery County take to pay people?
Well, you pay for when you get a service done. Yeah.
And the service was not appropriate. Okay.
Is there any indication that what is the minimum wage now in Montgomery County?
We're at $11.75 at this point.
Is there any indication?
We're above virtually everyone with the exception of the District of Columbia.
The federal minimum wage is $7.25 in Northern Virginia, across the whole state. Is there any indication that your higher minimum wage has cost the county jobs?
Well, it's hard to define that because right now when you look at what has happened thus far, I don't think there's empirical evidence to say that the current adjustment have cost jobs. Okay. But if you continue to go up that ladder, there's fear of that. And when you look at what our businesses are saying and you look at what probably the only empirical study done by some independent analysis on it where you've actually had 15 is out in Seattle. And in that study, they show very clearly that there have been job losses and some adverse effects to it. But what we're talking about now, since others have not done so, we are going on the assumption made by large numbers of businesses in the private sector to indicate that they clearly cannot make that adjustment as fast as the council wanted it to.
You're not running again. You're retiring. Are you retiring from politics?
I'm retiring, period.
You're retiring. What are you going? Well, first of all, you have to go through next year, right?
Right. So, another year, another 14 months or so.
Until January, or when is
December of 2018.
So before I ask you who you're going to support, because you probably won't answer, what do you plan to do? You're only about, 72, you told
right.
me?
Yeah.
What do you anticipate doing when you're not in the center of the maelstrom?
Well, he's known as a law school professor,
yes,
so
right.
there's that.
Have you looked at the word retire, what that means?
And, you know, there are studies, speaking of studies, there are studies that show people are not retiring now. They're cutting back, but they're postponing retirement significantly into their 70s.
Well, my wife has said to me, you know, you've been so busy doing so many things simultaneously for so many years that you're going to get awfully bored quickly in retirement. I said to her, I'm going to have to just see what that's like.
Onto the phones, put on your headphones, gentlemen, because Eugene in Washington has a question. Eugene, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Lance.
How you doing?
One of the issues that has plagued the Montgomery County area and other parts of the region as well is the rapid pace with which tall buildings are being constructed. The density of building that's going on in Rockville, in Bethesda, I think really has been extreme. As I recall, you planned prior to your election to advocate for moderate and slow growth in the county. And what we've seen instead is not moderate, but fast and tall growth, tall, dense growth in the county. And I wonder whether you realize that this is changing the character of the county and that there are many residents, longtime residents, who really are troubled by the changes that are going on. So
okay.
How would you respond to this issue?
Well, first of all, thank you for your question. And I think I did say that we wanted and needed moderate growth. I'm not sure I said slow growth, but moderate growth. But you have to also keep in mind the following factors on many of the projects we've just described in Bethesda, West Bar, and a number of other places. I was not for the level of density that was actually approved. I simply wanted something a little bit less than that, but it still would have been some tall building. And so there's a disconnect between my approach to some of the level of density versus what the county council would have ultimately decided. Secondly, keep in mind also that Montgomery County is divided into several areas of growth. We want to make sure that our rural areas, our farm areas, our agriculture reserve remains an agriculture reserve, which means that there will be, if you look at the master plan going back for many, many years, there were high growth in our master plans for the places you just described, Rockville, Bethesda, in order to offset less growth in other areas.
Thank you very much for your call, Eugene. And this probably won't make Eugene very happy, but Amazon is looking for the site of a second headquarters.
Well, speaking of small growth and small
business.
There's
a lot of competition. You would like Montgomery County to be in the running. One of the contenders for sites would be the White Flint Mall area. What advantages would that site have in a pitch to Amazon? And are there other sites you are considering?
Well, you're right. This is a real challenge here in terms of the competition. I've never seen anything like this. This competition is on steroids. And so if we get to the point of having to decide whether or not we will have higher growth in either Rockville or in some other places because we've attracted Amazon, I think that we'll be in a very good position because it suggests that we've made at least a round of discussions to put Montgomery County on the map and fighting to do just that. We are competing very, very high. This is a unique set of circumstances that will not present itself this way and for many, many years. And so Montgomery County is aggressively competing. And there's no way for me to tell you that if we are able to land any of the sites in Montgomery County, there would not be higher levels of traffic congestion. But I think the offset to that was such that in the long term, it will be beneficial for the county.
I'm just trying to picture Rockville Pike. I've driven out to Montgomery College in different places, and that's
it'll be much
effort.
Easier to picture because there'll be nothing moving
on. Here's one thing. The Council of Governments has talked about this, and just this past week even, about how the region is not working together as a region to get the 50,000 proposed jobs from the Amazon 2 in the Washington region. You know, Mayor Bowser has a proposal. Rashern Baker in Prince George's County has a proposal. You have a proposal. The Virginians have proposals. You can compete against each other, and everyone loses.
Yeah. But right now, we're not really competing against each other. The first round of competition where we go would be whether or not the Washington region, whether or not New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, other areas of the U.S. Will be an area for which they will be interested in pursuing. Once you get to that point, if a particular region or city is selected, then they will drill down to individual sites. So at this point in time, it's essentially the Washington region, essentially Philadelphia, New York, whatever the reason may be, and hopefully we will get to the second level. And then there may be competition within the region if we get to that point. And hopefully we will.
And it sounds like some people are complaining, urban analysts are complaining that any jurisdiction that wins would lose because of the enticements that you would have to give Amazon, a company that would build.
Well, I think that's always an evaluation, and we will carefully look at that, but I don't think that we will provide a proposal that is not in the best interest of Montgomery County, the state of Maryland, and for the region. And hopefully, if we get to that point, we'll be able to demonstrate why that is in our best interest based on the incentive that will ultimately be provided.
Well, if I can follow that up, you know, if we got that kind of business there, you would have more people coming to the region and visiting, too, and they might want to stay at Airbnbs in Montgomery County. That's a very, you know, this is not a controversial subject at all in the district or Prince George's or anywhere. But Airbnbs, what is the county trying to do there? Some people say it's cutting into the hotel industry. It's causing disquiet and disruption in neighborhoods. It's quite it's quite the kind of the Uber of residential living.
It certainly is, and it's a different impact versus inner cities versus the suburban areas. And what we're trying to do is to balance the concerns of neighbors, balance the concerns of people who are concerned about people coming into the neighborhoods in large numbers, but also to try to ensure that as it relates to the new form of providing access to places to stay, that we are providing that as well. And so what we've tried to do is to balance that.
So what would be the key points of what you would do to govern Airbnb?
Number one, to make sure that people are registered, to make certain that they, in fact, have a limited in terms of time, the number of places, the number of units that they would, in fact, rent, that they actually own the places that they are renting out. Those kinds of things that we're looking at in order to balance the intrusion in the neighborhoods and not having people who go and simply purchase homes and turn it over to small hotels, which would be circumventing our current laws.
Marriott Corporation, of course, is moving to Bethesda. I'll let Kojo get in here in just a moment. Has Marriott weighed in, lobbied at all on this, or is it too small potatoes for Marriott?
Well, no, the entire hotel industry has moved in, and so the association has voiced some concerns, and those concerns are pretty valid, and we want to make sure that we balance those. But more importantly for us, it is the neighborhood concerns, the neighbor-to-neighbor, who are seeing large numbers of cars coming in the neighborhood, people coming in, and large volumes that it's not consistent with what we think of Airbnb.
Our guest Airbnb. Is Ike Leggett. He is the Montgomery County Executive. He joins us in studio. You can join the conversation with a phone call, 800-433-8850, and email to kojowamu.org, a tweet at Kojo Show, or go to our website, kojoshow.org, watch the live video stream of this broadcast, ask a question or make a comment there. Here is Pat in Montgomery County. Pat, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. This question is for Mr. Leggett. I'm a small business owner in the county, and I have to deal with the government agencies a lot. And one of my biggest frustrations is the new call center system, where every single phone number goes into basically what I consider the largest answering service in the world. And you have to leave a message and then wait for a phone call back in 24 to 48 hours. And as a business person, that's just too long of a time, and I wind up actually having to physically drive to the offices in the county to get anything done, and it's very frustrating. And I really hope that that system is disbanded and you can actually call a place directly. And I'm wondering if that could be something that he proposes to get rid of that system.
No, ma'am, I put this system in, and the reason why I put this system in was what you just called about. In fact, your situation is very rare that we have complaints as you just described. We have probably over 95% people who are saying that they like the services provided. Now, there may be some unique challenges related to what you've just described, and if you would call me directly at 240-777-2552, we can look precisely at what you're talking about, but you know, the reason that you've just described is why we have the system. We had an old system, but that may have affected a few people very well, but the bulk of the people were not satisfied with it. We've got very positive response. In addition to what you've just described, we also have a business portal that you can go in and look at every answer, most answers, I would say, for every issue that pops up that related to businesses. That's a separate system as well. But the 311 system has worked very well. There may occasionally be a problem here and there, but overall, we have not had a large number of the complaints that you've just described. But let me look at precisely what you've just described. Call me directly at 240-777-2552.
What does that number go to?
Thank you very much
for
your call.
That's not a direct line to you, is
it? Yes, to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you very much for your call, Pat. Recently, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan laid out a major transportation plan that would widen the state's three most congested highways, including the Maryland portion of the Beltway and I-270. That's a big deal for Montgomery County, especially for people who spend way too much time commuting. You have said in the past that you'd like to see the state invest more in transit, but do you support the idea behind easing congestion on the Beltway and 270?
Well, the state is, in fact, investing more in transit. We certainly would want more. One of the big areas of transit of the state, we want more in terms of metro. They're investing in a bus rapid transit system that we are now looking at Route 29 and a number of other places. So more can be done, and certainly the Purple Line. But I think here we've fought for a number of years to get some improvement on 270 and to the Beltway as well. We are very appreciative of the fact that the governor's advanced some monies. We have some challenges as it relates to the particular details because I think the number of lanes that are suggested, the fact that some may be toll lanes inconsistent with the plans that we've had for a number of years. But I think that we can drill down, work those challenges out, so long as the money is there and the inclination is there to, in fact, improve 270 in the Beltway. But right now, the vast number of lanes and the fact that you would turn some into toll roads, toll lanes, would probably be a challenge for us in Montgomery County.
You know, there's been a suggestion, this being the politics hour, that the governor has done a good thing here in that he has been often criticized by folks in Montgomery and Prince George's County of not paying enough attention to this area. And he's buffered himself here by proposing this massive transportation plan that couldn't possibly get off the boards until after the elections next year with more planning. And so he's softened the opposition to him that he's ignoring this part of the state because people here don't vote for him. It sounds to me like a pretty good political move. He's proposed something, but the details will come after the next election.
That's very good, Tom. How did you get that?
You're the former chairman of the Democratic Party in Maryland. You know exactly what that did. Would you agree with that analysis? It's not my analysis. I'm just trying to keep up.
My assumption is that the governor is making this because he recognizes the transportation needs in Montgomery County, and he's responding to that. We'll deal with the politics at some other point in time.
No, but no, this is the politics hour. This is not the public policy hour. Because I'm about to ask you about the county executive race to replace you. You've been there for 8 years. Well, it's a pretty good move by the governor.
I'm working with this governor. I'm trying to make sure that we get the money for the transportation needs in Montgomery County. I assume his position as it relates to transportation is one based on the problems and challenges we face.
No, I believe he means what he wants to do, but it's just nice. It has a nice feather pillow politics around it. It makes it much easier for him.
Well, that's always a challenge that public officials face, that people may interpret their actions one way or the other politically.
But Thomas in Germantown has anticipated my next issue, so I'll give it to Thomas. Thomas, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Coach. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to ask County Executive, I'm a longtime resident of Montgomery County. I was born and raised, as a matter of fact. The MS-13 problem, I know that there was $1 million appropriated to help combat this. But it seems like to me that if we continue to status as a sanctuary city, then we will always have this MS-13 problem. I mean, we had the problem with the kid. The girl was raped in the school.
It turned out that in that particular case, the case was thrown out because the young woman was apparently not, in fact, raped by those two young men.
Okay, let me correct that then. But, okay, even if she wasn't, the fact that you had adults in schools with minors is a fact. And also, we also have a sanctuary city problem. I'm not saying that people aren't welcome, but there is a limit to everything. And as the county executive, Mr. Leggett, I mean, we need to put our foot down. We're nice, but sometimes you have to take a hard but fair type approach.
Okay, let me have Mike Leggett respond.
Well, first of all, we're not a sanctuary city. We have provided, I think, some support. But if you commit serious crimes in Montgomery County, we participate with ICE and the federal government in a way that any other jurisdiction does. Secondly, I think that the approach that we've taken has been one that I believe is a fair one. It balances the public safety of Montgomery County residents, and it also addresses the need to accommodate and not to have the local government out involved in federal authorities associated with arresting people. You indicated cracking down in the $1 million. The large numbers of people in Montgomery County in terms of the amounts that we spend are basically in the school system. And in the school system, I think the county, no jurisdiction has a choice in terms of providing educational support for anyone who enters the school system. There are challenges here and there, but I'm not going to stereotype and label the entire community. It's something to which we need to go and have something done to them as a result of what we're doing with MS-13. There's a challenge with MS-13. We're addressing that.
What's the scope of that challenge? What's the scope of the gang violence problem?
Happened, in the last, I think, 6 months to 8 months, we've had an uptick in some gang violence. And we are addressing that, and we are trying to get to the root of that. And I think the measures that we've taken, in addition to all the other things that we're doing in the county, not just in terms of the public safety aspect of it, but some of the health and human services challenges as well, I think that the police, state's attorney, and all of our agencies are now addressed the problem in a way that I think we're going to get positive results from that. But I'm not going to sugarcoat the challenge that we have in some areas of the county, and we're going to address that, and I think that we have a very good program to do so. But it's a problem that has developed over the entire country over the last few months.
But politically around the country, whether it's the President Trump's administration and the Attorney General, is to demonize much of the immigrant community by tying it to MS-13. MS-13 is a nationwide, maybe worldwide, problem, but as you just suggested, I want to hear more about it. You can't attack the immigration issue in this country by labeling everybody. We got to cut down on immigration because we're...
Well, that's what you heard.
You
the sentiments of the caller, though.
MS-13 was founded in Los Angeles.
That's right. That's true.
But it's, I mean, tell me, Montgomery County is no longer a white picket fence, Caucasian county suburb of Washington. Tell us something about what the diversity of Montgomery County is.
Well, the county is about 50%, close to 50% majority population, about 18% African-American, about 18% or so for Latino population, about 15% Asian. It's one of the most diverse communities in all of America, and we work very hard in maintaining that diversity, treating everyone with dignity and respect. And I certainly have done a whole hard portion of my administration has been devoted to making sure that we maintain that. But one of the things that I'm not going to do is to demonize an entire community. We have a large number of people in our community who are law-abiding, hardworking, and not part of MS-13. We'll deal with MS-13, but the vast, vast, overwhelming number of people are outside of that sphere, and we're going to work to make sure that we treat them all with dignity and respect.
When you talk about diversity in the county, here is David in Washington about diversity in the business community. David, your turn.
Hi. Thanks, Kojo. County Executive Leggett, my question is about furthering your point about diversity. Does the county use diverse firms in investing its money, using its money in private equity firms and that sort of thing, small, disadvantaged, minority-owned firms? Do you use those firms in the use of county money?
Yes, we do. In fact, we have two programs that address that. One is our Small Business Reserve Program, and we've also put in some very strong guidelines for our retirement system that which is responsible for most of the investment. And we've had a pretty good record in terms of our investment portfolio. Certainly, we could do better. I spoke at a procurement conference last week, and I think about 25% of all of our county dollars are now going into small and minority businesses. My effort now is to try to increase that. If you look at versus where we are today and the number of businesses that are doing business with Montgomery County, the percentage of about 40% are completely new. So there's some work to be done, and we are making progress, but certainly we want to get to the level that I think I feel.
We're running out of time, and you're stepping down next year after your third term as county executive. I was going to ask, how would you characterize your tenure? But Will in Adelphi says it better. He says, what does Mr. Leggett think people will remember him for? In other words, what will Ike's legacy be?
Well, I think twofold. First of all, we have to deal with the fact that we have brought this county through the maze of the Great Recession, and Montgomery County stands today with a AAA bond rated county in terms of all the major rating agencies. We have the highest financial reserves in the history of the county, and I think financially going through all of that and to make sure that we respond to the needs of housing, transportation, public safety, all of those things, I think the management of the county would be something to remember. I could drill down into details of specific items, but because of the sake of time, I hope that I'll come back before my term is over,
I think
we could
will.
Go through those things. But I would lend my hat on financial management stability. That would be the key.
And you've got a half dozen people running at this point, roughly a half dozen. What would you say? You're likely not to endorse any one of the candidates to succeed.
I'm not
you.
Sure that I will, but
you,
I
mean, later, I mean, but not I mean, now. You're not going. Right. Yeah. But what does the voter look for in somebody to replace you? There, all these candidates, many of whom are term limited out of one office, are running for another. I don't think that's necessarily the purpose of term limits, but that's what's happening. What should we look at here to see who?
Well, certainly, beyond the traditional things you looked at all candidates, I think one of the things people have clearly indicated that they want people who can effectively manage change as we change as a county. How can we effectively manage that in terms of all the things that we've talked about here today, our demographics, our businesses, the change in portfolio of businesses that are in the county, the growth issues as well. Yeah. How do you effectively manage that?
Is there any candidate you would rule out?
Not yet, but there may be some I will rule out.
Ike Leggett, thank you so much for joining us. You will be back before.
And while you're on the way out, what about Governor? Are you supporting Rashearn Baker? You've kind of said you're supporting him, but you didn't make it as clear as I thought he'd like to have it.
We'll see how things go. We have a little bit of time before we make an adjustment.
Ike Leggett is Montgomery County's executive. He is a Democrat. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, Ed Gillespie, Republican candidate for governor of Virginia. He will be joining us very shortly. If you have questions or comments for him, you can start calling 800-433-8850. Send an email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at KojoShow or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. Tom Sherwood, the D.C. Council seems to be at odds over this issue of family leave. First they passed a bill, and now they're apparently looking at the bill again. What's the problem?
How to pay for it. Huh. It's great to have a paid family leave where you get 8 weeks for a sick person in your family, for birth of a child or adoption of a child, 6 weeks for the sickness in the family, or 2 weeks for yourself. But here's the problem. They don't have to pay for it, and so they're trying to figure out whether it's going to be a tax or whether you're just going to tell government, large businesses to do it.
Joining us now by phone is Ed Gillespie. He is the Republican candidate for governor of Virginia. He is the former chair of the Republican National Committee. Ed Gillespie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for giving me time with you and your listeners, Kojo. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You did a little bit of a dance in response to President Trump's tweet last week, trashing your opponent and endorsing you. You responded that you hadn't asked the president to weigh in, but then you pivoted to say you did not ask him not to endorse you. I'm going to skip the campaign strategy question. I won't. Are you inviting President Trump to come to Virginia?
Well, we don't talk about our campaign strategy with the media. I appreciate the invitation to do that, but we keep those internal discussions internal. But thank you for the invitation.
How do you think the president is doing as president, and is he good for Virginia?
Well, look, I believe building more ships and submarines in Newport News is critically important to our economy, and I'm glad that we're doing that. We need to keep Norfolk the largest naval base in the world. I support repeal of the Clean Power Plan, which was obviously having a very damaging impact, but not just on coal miners' jobs in Southwest Virginia. Also, it's going to make it harder for us to foster advanced manufacturing and hurting manufacturing jobs and driving up the costs for consumers when it comes to our electric bills, which hits the poorest families the hardest. And I believe I could be effective in working on behalf of the people of Virginia to get $10 that we send to Washington, D.C. spent in Virginia. And so, you know, as governor of the Commonwealth, you always have to be able to work with the president of the United States. And that's true if you're a Democratic governor working with a Republican president, or a Republican governor working with a Democratic president, as we've seen in the past, or a president of your own party. But I'll be able to work with the president and the vice president and the cabinet to get things done for Virginia. And Kojo, 20% of our economy is direct federal spending in Virginia. 20 cents of every dollar in our economy is a direct federal dollar.
Here's Tom Sherwood.
Mr. Gillespie, we only have a short time. We appreciate your calling. And where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from 495 from the Beltway, believe it or
not. Okay, I hope you're not driving. This is Tom Sherwood. This is Tom Sherwood from NBC4 here in Washington. Thank you for joining us. I know you don't have a lot of time. You do have Vice President Pence coming into Abingdon, I think, tomorrow to campaign for you. What message is it that, for Northern Virginia listeners up here, what message is it are you sending with the Vice President down there, where the Vice President is welcome and you're going to be appearing with him, but the President, is, as you well know, is more controversial in your Commonwealth?
Well, I'm proud to say that Vice President Pence is a friend of mine, someone I've known for some time, and, you know, obviously you have to campaign all across our Commonwealth, which is and we're a bigger state than people realize. And
you're almost to Kentucky out there.
Yeah, right. And I'm glad that he is going to join me tomorrow. We're going to have a big crowd. I think people are going to be very enthusiastic, and we're going to, fire up a lot of volunteers for the home stretch of this campaign. We got 26 days to go, not that anybody's counting, Tom. But
I thought it was 24, but I'll go with your 26. Let me ask you about Corey Stewart, because up here in Northern Virginia, you well know, you ran a really tough campaign for the Senate. So people are surprised you're not a U.S. Senator right now. But Loudoun County and Prince William County are important swing counties in Northern Virginia. As you know, the Democrats run up the vote up here in Northern Virginia. The discussions reports this week that you're at least talking with Corey Stewart's people and even Steve Bannon about whether Corey Stewart's going to publicly come out and give you an unqualified endorsement. Is there any progress on that? Is he going to do that? Do you want that?
I have no idea what that story's about, to be honest with you. I've never met Mr. Bannon. Haven't had a single conversation with him.
And your campaign is not doing it?
Okay. In his campaign for the United States Senate, Corey has repeatedly urged voters to support our ticket, me and Jill Vogel and John Adams, and we appreciate that very much. And we've got a unified party. You know, if you look at the polls, and the polls aren't accurate in every respect, but it's clear that Republicans are uniting behind our ticket and supportive of me and Jill and John, which I appreciate very much. And I feel a lot of momentum out there.
Okay. I will tell you, I talked to the Northam campaign, and they said you are very well known and that you are a traditional classic Republican. You worked for George Bush. I mean, you were involved in the 2000 election battle. You have a strong, established Republican a resume. But their fear is whether or not the dislike for President Trump in your state could cause you to lose on November the 7th.
Oh, everywhere I go, Tom, you know, Virginia voters are very focused on what are your plans and policies to get our economy growing again. Our economic growth rate last year was 0.6%. We were 39th out of 50 states in economic growth. What are you going to do to improve our public schools, to provide for congestion relief? You know, from Northern Virginia, I know what it's like to be have the anxiety of being stuck in traffic and worrying about being late, or even worse, the frustration of not getting home in time for dinner with your family. And I've got 19 specific detailed policy proposals that will
Don't list them.
Okay, I won't list them all. But,
I do have a question for you about specifics.
And they're all good policies.
About specifics on one policy, the three top issues for Virginians, according to recent polls, are health care, education, and taxes. Let's talk about health care. This week, President Trump decided to end federal payments to insurers for lower-income Americans. He also stripped some of the requirements from the Affordable Care Act. You've called the current system too costly. And indeed, premiums in Virginia are looking like they will rise by a staggering 80% for those seeking individual plans in Virginia. But we haven't heard much in the way of specifics from you. What would you do to ensure health care is affordable for all Virginians? And what do you think about the president's apparently ending Obamacare by other means and how it will affect Virginians?
Well, if you haven't heard that from me, I'll take responsibility for that. But I've unveiled a plan, Health in Our Commonwealth, to make health care more affordable for my fellow Virginians. It's on my website, edforvirginia.com/health, and it would expand access and affordability for all Virginians. A couple of things I'll mention about it, Kojo. Number one is, sure, we need to have more competition in the insurance market, and more competition would bring down costs. But we're going to have more than 50 localities around Virginia by next year where there's only one insurer in the exchange, and that's no competition at all. That's a captive marketplace. And so I put forward a plan to allow for us to work with surrounding states, Maryland and West Virginia and Kentucky and Tennessee and North Carolina, for us to allow for competition across state lines. One of the things that's clear to me is we can't wait on Washington, D.C. to solve our problems. In Virginia, we've got to have state responses to the challenges we face. And one of those 19 detailed plans is on health care and making it more affordable and available to Virginians. Increased competition in the insurance markets would help bring down costs. Good. Also, increased competition in the provider markets would help bring down costs, and that's part of my plan. And we've got to bend the cost curve in Medicaid as well, and okay, make sure that we are maximizing every single dollar. And that's part of my plan to allow us to innovate. What we need in Virginia is different from what they need in Illinois or California or New York or Florida or Texas, and allowing us to innovate and meet the needs of Virginians would be an important
part. Allow me to go to the phones, because both Carla in Arlington and Derek in Blacksburg, Virginia, have, I think, questions about the same issue. So I'll go to one and then the other and have you respond to them. First, you, Carla, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. We don't have a lot of time.
Hey, Kojo. I'm an immigrant, originally from Bolivia, and I've lived in Virginia since I was 7. You claim, Mr. Gillespie, that we're all worried about the economy and traffic, but actually I'm worried about you, because last week I watched several ads that you put out trying to scare my neighbors and my community, implying by association that immigrants are gang members. And you use coded language to stoke racial tension by preying on people's fears.
Okay, allow me to go to
what happened in Charlotte.
Allow me to go to Derek in Blacksburg. Derek, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Don't have a lot of time. Oh.
Yes, sir. I'm a disabled veteran, and I've had the privilege to serve with a lot of Hispanics. And I, too, have seen these ads, and I just listened to you talk about sanctuary cities and how we really don't have them. It really bothers me that he's going to sit here in commercials. And why would you decide now, when you've talked about in the past that you thought it was against Republicans' best interest to sit here and demonize immigrants, yet you're going to sit here and run commercials?
Is that what you're doing, Mr. Gillespie? Are you demonizing immigrants?
Not at all. I'm proud to be the son of an immigrant myself, and I know people who come to this country to make a better life for themselves and for their families are patriotic Americans like my father. Both my parents are laid to rest in a veterans cemetery. And the fact is, it's, you know, others who are conflating MS-13 and the immigrant community, not me. I'm making a very clear distinction. And in fact, I was talking to one Hispanic faith leader in Northern Virginia earlier in this week. Or I guess last week.
But your ads do seem to make a connection between sanctuary cities and MS-13.
If I could finish my
thought,
Kojo. Yeah, thank you. And, you know, he said MS-13, they are completely opposite Hispanic values, and I agree with that. And it is the Hispanic community themselves and the immigrant community that are most at risk and most vulnerable to violence by MS-13. And let's be clear about something. Since November, we have had 8 MS-13-related murders in Northern Virginia.
Is the governor responsible?
2,000 MS-13 gang members in Fairfax County. And we have got to make our community safer. I don't believe that allowing for sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia will make us safer. I believe if someone is here illegally and they commit a violent crime, that we need to comply with federal laws and with the federal immigration authorities, and that person should be deported in compliance with the law. It's not folks in my neighborhood or young women or young girls who are subject to, you know, the human trafficking that are most vulnerable to MS-13. It is folks in the immigrant community, and I will protect them. And if you allow for sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth, I don't think that will make our community safer. Now,
okay.
People say, well, I heard somebody say we don't have any, and I've noticed that. But my point is, one, leadership is not just about responding to problems. It is about preventing problems. And two, when I asked my opponent, the lieutenant governor, at the debate, whether he would support a bill to ban sanctuary cities if, you know, they occurred in the Commonwealth and a city or county declared themselves and said they would not cooperate with federal authorities, but he signed legislation to ban it in the, you know, after that, and he refused to say he would.
Okay, so here's Tom Sherwood.
I think it's an important issue, and he cast a vote in our state Senate against a bill to ban sanctuary cities, and he bragged about that in his Democratic primary.
Well, Mr. Gillespie, I don't want to get into that because I'm aware of the political allegations about that vote and how it was set up, and I also watched the Wise County debate out there almost to Tennessee. But I want to ask you about abortion because you're getting hammered up here in Northern Virginia, and I want to give you a chance to respond to the ad that says, a quote you were saying, that I would like to see abortion be banned because I think it is a taking of an innocent human life. And when you were asked about overturning Roe v. Wade, and you have said in the past that you are pro-life and that you only favor abortion, you don't favor, but you accept abortion for the rape of a woman or the life of the mother. Has your policy, has your position changed?
No, not surprisingly, as takes things out of context and don't provide full context. And the fact is, I am pro-life, and I am opposed to abortion, but I do have those exceptions. for life of the mother being in danger, or in cases that involve rape or incest. And clearly my opponent is, he supports abortion in every instance, by the way, at every point in pregnancy, including in the last trimester, paid for with taxpayer dollars, because the child is an unborn child. It might be a girl and you want a boy, or vice versa. And, you know, these are, you know, there are differences on this policy as well as other policies. But I believe those views are outside the mainstream.
All right. So let me ask you about Northern Virginia, because, as you know, the three-corner offense for Democrats is they run up the score in Northern Virginia. They run it up really well by hundreds of thousands of votes, and the Republicans have to make it up in Abingdon and far southwest Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley and down around Virginia Beach. Where are you now in the Northern Virginia contest here? I know you have to hold, get as many votes as possible, but you don't really expect to win Northern Virginia, do you?
You know, I'm from Northern Virginia. I feel like I'm going to do very, very well in Northern Virginia. And in fact, I'm proud to have received the endorsement of the Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce because of my pro-growth economic policies, as well as former Senator John Warner, who didn't even support me in my Senate race. He supported Senator Mark Warner, which I respected. But I'm proud to have their endorsement, as well as the NFIB for Virginia. And I'm going to do very well. I've campaigned everywhere in the Commonwealth. And in fact, I just left Friday prayers at the Adams Center. I've been to the Korea-U.S. Festival in Chantilly last. I take my message everywhere. There's nowhere I won't go in the Commonwealth, because there's no one I won't serve as our governor. And so I'm optimistic that I'm going to do very, very well in Northern Virginia.
We only have 1 minute left, so Kathy in Loudoun County seems to have a short question. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to know what your three small businesses are that you've spoken about.
Sure. I have I've shut my business down, but my business was in Old Town for more than a decade now. Ed Gillespie Strategies. I had a business in Washington, D.C., Quinn Gillespie and Associates, and another business before that, Policy Impact Communications.
I'm afraid
we are successful small businesses, and I grew up in a small business, the J&C Market. J&C were Jack and Connie, or as I knew the mom and dad, a family grocery store.
I'm afraid we're just about out of
for family-owned business.
Time, Mr. Gillespie. Ed Gillespie is the Republican candidate for governor of Virginia. He's the former chair of the Republican National Committee. Thank you for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much for making time for me to be with you and your listeners.
Thank you.
That's it for the show today, but don't forget to meet us back here on Monday. We'll talk with the head of the D.C. Office of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs, Melinda Bowling. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
The Kojo Nandi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingalisa Schrobsdorf, Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, and Avery Kleiman. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Nandi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.